Hitler was dead, the peace in Europe almost a month old. Only the Japanese remained to be dealt with. In June, the Viceroy left London, flew back to Delhi, said nothing in public for nearly 2 weeks, and then announced a conference of Indian leaders at Simla to discuss proposals which he hoped would ease the political situation, hasten final victory, and advance the country towards her goal of full self-government. To enable all the leaders to be there, he had to issue several orders of release from imprisonment. The conference opened on June the 25th and did not break down until July the 14th, an unexpectedly long time, in the opinion of many English officials, for Congress and Muslim League views on the composition of a new Indianized Executive Council or interim government to prove irreconcilable. The Viceroy, Lord Wavell, admitting failure, blamed himself and begged that there should be no recriminations. Subsequently, in press conference, the leader of the All India Congress Party, a Muslim, blamed the leader of the Muslim League for the unbending nature of his claim for the League's right to nominate all Muslim members of the proposed Executive Council, and blamed the British government for not having foreseen that the conference would break down if one party were given the right of veto on nominations, and therefore the opportunity to hold up the country's progress to autonomy. The leader of the Muslim League spoke disapprovingly of a combination of Hindu interests supported by the latest exponent of geographical unity, the Viceroy, whose plan, in his opinion, was a snare for Muslim interests. Mr. Nehru described the Muslim League as medieval in conception and warned that the real problem facing a free India would not be communal and religious differences, but economic backwardness. The members of the conference then left Simla to consider the situation in private. Among the first to go was Mr. Mohammed Ali Qasim, a Muslim congressman and ex-chief minister of the pre-war government of the province of Ranpur, who, if Jinnah had his way, could expect no portfolio in the higher council. Like several other prominent Congress politicians, Mr. Qasim had not been seen in public for nearly 3 years. Guarded from reporters by a small but efficient entourage headed by his younger son Ahmed, he ignored the questions shouted at him as he left the Cecil Hotel and concentrated on helping Ahmed to support a frail old man, later identified by onlookers as his aged and ailing secretary, Mr. Masood. Safe in his car at last, he snubbed the young man from the Civil and Military Gazette, who got close enough to the window to say, "Minister, is Pakistan now inevitable?" by commanding Ahmed to put up the glass and pull down the blinds. The lowering of the blinds caught the imagination of an Indian cartoonist who portrayed the car, identified as that of the ex-chief minister by the initials M.A.K. on one of its doors, with all its windows, including the driver's, shuttered and making off at high speed, smoke rings from the exhaust, from a once imposing but now crumbling portal inscribed Congress, towards a distant horizon with a sun marked Hopes of Office rising behind a broken down bungalow on whose rickety veranda the leader of the Muslim League, Mr. Jinnah, could be seen conferring with several of his associates. The cartoon annoyed adherents of Congress. They objected both to the inference that Mr. Qasim was about to betray them and join the League, and to the representation of their party as a derelict doorway with nothing behind it. Similarly, Muslim Leaguers objected to the portrayal of the Qaid-e-Azam as the occupier of a squalid little property such as the one depicted. By the time the cartoon appeared, 2 days after the end of the conference, the liberals and middle-of-the-road men in Indian politics, who might have protested at the lampooning of a man whose legal skills and political integrity had commanded wide respect for a quarter of a century, could not help wondering whether Mr. Qasim had, after all, shown himself as capable as men of lesser merit of acting with an eye to the main chance. What else, they asked, but an intention to shift his allegiance to the League in the hope of securing his political future with a party that had grown strong enough to wreck a viceregal conference, could better explain his subsequent mysterious behaviour.